As I watch, frozen, they cover Dulcie in bubble wrap, pack her away in a box of other snow globes, and load it into their truck. I memorize the license plate number, USGW-3111. They drive it across the street and park in the lot of the Ancient Mariner Hotel. They secure the door with two different combination locks, and my heart sinks.
"Dude," Gonzo says quietly, "Balder."
And I know there's nothing else I can do right now. We run out to rescue our valiant Viking, who's buried up to his neck, the driftwood still sticking out on the sides. I offer the kid $10.
"For the yard gnome."
We carry Balder to a more secluded spot.
"I saw it. I saw Ringhorn."
We help him to his feet. He winces.
"Cameron, are you all right?"
he asks.
"They got Dulcie. They turned her into a snow globe."
I'm trying not to cry. My eyes sting.
"I am sorry,"
Balder says. He pulls on the driftwood spear, but can't dislodge it. It's really wedged in there.
"Could you?"
Together, we manage to yank it free. The end is slippery, and it stains my hands red.
"Oh, my,"
Balder says. He stands there, arms wide, gazing at his chest in total wonder. And that's when I see it, a small trickle of blood burbling up and spilling down the front of his shirt. Balder is bleeding. Gonzo's eyes are wide.
"Oh, my,"
Balder repeats. He puts a hand to his chest and the blood seeps between his closed fingers, a thin red waterfall.
"That stick?"
He examines the end. A small cluster of white berries sprouts from a tiny knob. Balder rubs the berries between his fingers, inhales their scent.
"Mistletoe."
"Balder!"
I shout as his legs give out. I grab hold and we drop to the sand, Balder cradled in my arms as his warm, sticky blood pools in my hands.
"Balder!"
Our Viking's breath comes fast and shallow.
"All pledge no harm to Balder, save for the mistletoe, who was too young. But Loki the trickster, he must have known."
"Shh, don't talk. We'll get you in the car."
"No,"
he says and coughs.
"No. Leave me here on the beach for Ringhorn."
It's gotten dark. The fishing boats are heading in. Their lights cast lonely pools of white on the water. There's no Ringhorn.
"We'll come back for your ship,"
I lie.
"You need a doctor."
"No. Ringhorn will come. Wait. Wait with me,"
Balder urges. When I look over, Gonzo's got his arms crossed. He's kicking at the ground and crying without making a noise, except for a little strangled sob deep in his throat.
"Wait with me,"
Balder asks again. We keep our vigil through the night, checking on the truck when we can. Sometimes, Balder mumble-sings a few words in Norse. He grabs at the air for something we can't see, something just out of reach.
"The dark does not weep,"
he whispers. Toward dawn, he gets so quiet I'm afraid. Early morning surfers take to the waves. Seagulls circle us.
"I like that sound,"
Balder says, his words pushing out on shallow gasps. At first, I think he means Gonzo's sniffling.
"What sound, Balder?"
"The gulls cry, and the waves answer. They wash over the shore Say, it is all...
His eyes move back and forth in his head like he's searching for the word, the thought. He looks at me as if he said it.
Right?
I listen, but the only thing I can hear are those damn birds wailing. One starts, and the rest follow. They're all crying at once. It's a terrible sound.
Balder,
I say. His mouth is still open in that weird little smile. His eyes are fixed and staring. The gulls fly off, leaving nothing but the soothing whoosh of the tide rushing up, washing back out again and again. All right. All right. All right. It takes us a while to get everything we need. Scavenging along the beach, we find a surfboard, a cardboard taco shack tray, an abandoned t-shirt, seashells, and handfuls of seaweed and small sticks. We duct tape the cardboard tray to the surfboard and rig the caddy's bullhorns to the front. We load the tray with his Sammy the Surfer outfit and all my great tremolo CDs. When it's ready, we place Balder's lifeless body gently on top of the tray. In his chainmail and helmet, just like a Viking warrior on his way to Valhalla. Last, we add a hand-lettered sign, Ringhorn.
What do you think?
I ask Gonzo.
Good.
His eyes are red. He takes a puff off his inhaler and puts it in Balder's hands.
The air might be crap there.
He hands me a disposable blue lighter we found half-buried by the taco shack. I put it to the dry seaweed, which starts to smoke immediately. The flames eat through the cardboard pretty fast. In seconds, they surround Balder in a hot orange halo. I lift my foot, Gonzo gives the surfboard a final push, and the sea does the rest. The water's pretty choppy. It buffets our makeshift pyre back and forth, and finally over, till the only thing left on the peach-pink horizon are those crazy bullhorns. And then, even those are gone. An hour later, the United Snow Globe wholesaler's truck, license plate number USGW3111, pulls out of the hotel parking lot. 1 minute after that, we follow. Chapter 48, in which the coyote and the roadrunner go again.
You still see him?
Yeah, he's four cars up,
Gonzo answers.
Dude, shouldn't we be going after Dr. X and your cure?
Not going, I say.
What do you mean?
I'm going after Dulcy.
Cameron, this is crazy.
Just keep an eye on that truck. For the next hour, we drive in silence. No talk, no music. Nothing but the white noise of asphalt under tires. The road sways in the afternoon sun. Little waves of clear heat spiral dance in front of me, bathing everything in shimmery motion. I keep glancing in the rearview mirror, expecting to see Balder in the back seat, and the emptiness of it presses down on me, along with the last sight I had of Dulcy. The signs are starting to blur into big globs of reflective green and white that hurt my eyes. Sometimes on the sides of the roads I see things that aren't there. Mom and Dad holding each other. Balder running through the grass toward a glimmering hall. Glory switching out the bag on an IV pole. The old lady with her garden shears. She waves to me. The coyote. The roadrunner. The Copenhagen interpretation playing hacky sack with the Kalabiyao. Just a bunch of travelers on the same road. But I don't see Dulcy, no matter how hard I try to make her appear. The caddy veers over the yellow line, nearly hitting a big truck, whose horn blast has me swerving back into our lane with a jerk.
Holy shit!
Gonzo says, putting his hands on the dash. Sorry, I say. I pull the car over to the shoulder and rest my head on the steering wheel. I'm clammy, and my muscles ache.
You okay?
Gonzo asks. Yeah, I lie. USGW-3111 turns on his blinker and hits the exit, stopping at a Freedom Waffles. There's a salvage yard on a dusty yellow road to the right of the diner. I park beside the chain-link fence and the mile-high towers of tires and cut the engine.
Can you keep watch?
I ask, and then I remember how Gonzo got our asses stranded by not looking out for the bus. Seems like years ago.
Never mind, I'll keep an eye out. No, man, it's okay. Get some sleep. I'm on it.
And I can tell he is.
Thanks, you know, for everything. You're a great wingman,
I say.
Gonzo smirks. Yeah, well, that's what you get when you sign up the Dwarf of Destiny, cabron.
I climb into the back seat, shut my eyes, and go to sleep. I'm a roadrunner. I look down and see those big bird feet, and that's when I know I'm dreaming. I'm standing in the middle of a cartoon desert landscape. It's two-dimensional, a bunch of squiggly lines and paint. There are no anvils rigged over my head, no fake holes painted on a backdrop, no explosives rigged to a fuse that will trigger a domino effect of roadrunner snuffing devices. Nope. I'm alone out here. Just me. And then I see the coyote sitting in a chair, watching TV, his paw in a big bowl of popcorn, like he could care less. At first I think it's a trap, but then I realize that he really doesn't care about chasing me. I say, beep beep, and he keeps flipping channels with his remote. Finally, I give up and hop over to him. Aren't you going to chase me? I ask. He looks at me. His yellow eyes are weary.
What's the point?
He's got me there. I don't know, I say, sitting on the edge of his chair. Because it's what we do.
Huh,
he says. He offers me some popcorn. I peck at it because I'm a bird now. We sit watching cartoons. A tumbleweed rolls past. It's really just a bunch of angry pencil marks made to look like motion, an illusion. I guess this is nice, but what I really want to do is run. But without the coyote chasing me, I don't have a reason to run. Knowing he wants to catch me makes me keep going. And knowing I'm just out of reach makes him keep coming after me. We can't really live without each other. That's how it works.
Come on, I whisper in my bird voice. Chase me. Just one more time.
Dude, wakey wakey.
Gonzo's face looms over mine.
We got movement.
I wipe the sleep from my eyes. Through the windshield, I can see employees number 457 and number 458 opening the back of the truck and loading a box onto the dolly. 2 minutes later, they come out of the diner with the empty dolly, climb into the truck's cab, and head back toward the interstate.
Dude, aren't we following them?
Gonzo asks.
Gotta check the diner first, I say, making my way toward the door.
My legs have really stiffened up. A shining, bright-smiled hostess greets us at the door, a couple of menus the size of atlases in her hands.
Joining us for breakfast today? Will that be smoking or non-smoking?
I'm sorry, I say. We're sort of in a hurry. We were just wondering about that box of snow globes that was delivered. Could we check them, please? Her thumb hovers over the silent alarm button near the cash register. Buddha Burger had one of those.
We don't let people just check out our snow globes till they've been inventoried.
Inventoried?
Gonzo mouths. My eyes flash a don't go there signal. I've got to see if Dulcie's in that box.
I'm sorry, I'm with quality control. We think you may have gotten one of our tainted shipments.
Tainted?
The hostess repeats, her smile gone.
What's that mean?
There might be something wrong with them. Really wrong. Like laced with poison wrong. Her hand flies to her mouth.
Oh my gosh! We better call the police then!
No, I say too quickly. The hostess's eyes narrow. She looks from me to Gonzo and back again.
Is this some kind of prank? Are y'all with a fraternity?
I shake my head. You got us. It is a prank. I steal a look at her name tag. Freedom LaToya? Actually, we're casting for a new reality TV show. Freedom LaToya's eyes get very big.
For real?
You bet. I probably shouldn't tell you this, but... I make a show of craning my neck left and right. It's set in a restaurant, and it's all about finding the perfect restaurant hostess. In fact, it's called The Hostess. United Snow Globe Wholesalers is the sponsor. You know, you'd make a great candidate. I'm gonna let them know.
Wow, thanks. TV. Oh, wow.
Yeah, but we do need to get some footage of me looking through that box for the show.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead.
Freedom LaToya takes us to the stockroom.
I'll just leave you to it, then.
You do that. Thanks. We cut through the tape, open the box, and pull the bubble wrap from all 10 snow globes. Not one of them is Dulcie. Let's go, I say, running for the car.
Dude, that was awesome,
Gonzo says, fastening his seatbelt.
How did you think of something as stupid as a reality show about restaurant hostessing?
I gun the engine. You don't want to know. It takes us about 10 minutes of driving like a bat out of hell before we have the truck in our sights again. We follow it to each drop-off, gas stations, restaurants, gift shops, churches, until it's late afternoon and the caddy Rosinante starts kicking up that hot oil smell again. Shit. Hold together, pal. I might as well be talking to myself. The twitches are back, and I really don't know how much longer I can safely drive with my arms ready to breakdance. Green and white signs pass overhead, telling us where we are, where we're headed. Orlando, Interstate 4, North Exit 62, Osceola Parkway. The green dreads of the palm trees dance in the breeze. Gleaming hotels play peekaboo with the crisscross of highways. Streetlights crane their necks over the roads like metal flamingos. 536 East to International Drive South, Lake Buena Vista, Central Florida Parkway. The signs change from green and white to blue and red. Magic Kingdom, World Drive. Up ahead is a huge archway with the world's most beloved mouse attached.
No way!
Gonzo says as the truck makes the turnoff. Every cell in my body is on high alert. Welcome to Disney World, I say. Chapter 49 Of What Happens When We Hit Fantasyland. Finding a parking spot for the caddy in the cavernous Disney World lot proves challenging. Every white-striped piece of asphalt for a mile is taken. The tops of the cars are like colored circuits on some huge motherboard. I end up parking the caddy on a strip of grass that I'm sure will get it towed. It doesn't matter now. We take the parking lot tram to the monorail, which zips us to the front gates of America's favorite amusement park. It takes most of the rest of our money to get our tickets, and then we're inside, standing on Main Street. All around us, life-sized furry cartoon characters wave and dance and pose for pictures. I stagger into Gonzo, who pushes me back up with a grunt. My forehead's beating with cold sweat. His eyes widen.
Dude!
He says softly, nodding at my wristband. The e-tickets lost all but a thin line of color below Tomorrowland. I'm almost out of health.
My lungs feel like they've been tied up with shoelaces.
Be okay,
I pant.
Gotta find Dulcie.
Where are we?
Main Street.
Up ahead, Cinderella's castle shines like a mirage in the late afternoon haze. An old-fashioned car putt-putts past. Visitors crowd the sidewalks and street. It all seems unreal, except for the security guards patrolling with their walkie-talkies. Gonzo nods toward the guards.
I see them, I say. We need disguises.
In one of the 4 zillion gift shops, we buy a giant knight's helmet, a wizard's cape, and an ultimate peace weapon for me, and a droopy-eared dog hat and matching costume for Gonzo.
I feel like a complete asshat,
Gonzo mutters through the mask.
Better than being a snow globe, I remind him. Here.
I press the remainder of our stash, $400, into his paw.
What's this for?
Bus ticket to New York. Say hi to Drew for me. Go see the Empire State Building. I always wanted to do that.
You say that like you're not coming back, dude.
I don't know what's gonna happen. Look, just take the money, okay?
Okay,
he says softly. He pats himself with his paws.
Does this thing have a fucking pocket?
Gonzo unzips the costume on the side and tucks the wad of cash into his jeans. The two of us hoof it down Main Street, keeping a lookout for anybody pushing a dolly of snow globes. In each gift shop, we stop to check their inventory, with no luck. It's a nice day, and the park is crammed with people, families on vacation, honeymoon couples wearing mouse-ear top hats and veils, grandmas and grandpas indulging their grandkids with souvenirs.
Tulsi, where are you?
By the time we reach Fantasyland, I'm so tired I'm hallucinating. I think I see Glory walking past me with her IV pole. She smiles, but when I look again, it's just some lady pushing a stroller. Gonzo's eyes are huge. His face radiates awe. He's digging Disney, the character parades, the rides, the crazy light-up toys. Gonzo's cell rings. Hurriedly, he unzips his costume and roots around in his pocket, which looks really pervy.
Hello?
He says, a big smile breaking.
Hey,
he says, all flirty.
Not much. What are you doing?
He mouths the word,
Drew,
to me.
Can you call him back?
I snipe.
Oh, sure,
he says.
Hey, baby, can I call you back? We're kinda at Disney World.
I sigh.
An arcade? We are so there.
Gonzo pulls away from the phone for a second.
Drew says Space Mountain is, like, redonkulous.
What's that?
Gonzo says into the phone again.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I miss you, too.
I start to tell Gonzo to hang up, that we need to find Dulcie, but I realize that I'm the one who needs to find Dulcie. He's found what he came for. So I let him talk for a minute longer while I keep a lookout for guys in mirrored sunglasses pushing dollies of boxed snow globes to secret destinations. I wander over to the Small World ride and wait in a small patch of shade. Faint music floats out. People load into the boats and drift off into the dark, happy underworld of Disney.
Line starts over there,
somebody says. That's okay, I'm just waiting.
Suit yourself,
she says. And when I look, it's the old lady from the hospital. She gets online.
Hey!
I stumble after her, but when I get there, it's a different woman altogether.
Sorry,
I say.
Thought you were someone else.
She smiles.
That happens to me all the time.
People come and go. Moms walking fast pull little kids toward bathroom entrances, sounding pissed.
Why didn't you go before we got in line?
The kids are crying or whining.
Sometimes the dads wait outside. The moms try to hand bags and stuffed animals and shit to the dads, but the dads don't do it right. They don't get it, and the moms get all pissy. They say things like,
"Well, I thought we decided not to do Splash Mountain this time,"
while the dads stick their hands in their pockets. All I can think is, this is the place where I spent the happiest day of my life? Why? The lines are all crazy long, and I think, there is no way I would wait around in the sun for some lousy ride that's over too quick. But then the kids come pouring out of the exit, and what I see makes me want to cry. Their faces are pure wonder. They're all lit up and talking a mile a minute. The parents trail behind them, smiling too, a contagious joy. Something plops onto my shoulder, a feather. "Dulcie?" I call, but on closer examination, it's a pigeon feather, perfectly ordinary. A United Snow Globe Wholesalers employee pushes past me with a box on a dolly. The side of the box is stamped Tomorrowland. A tingle works its way up my neck. Dulcie's here. I know it. And so is Dr. X. Like Dulcie said, the only thing that makes sense in this world is the random. I have to tell Gonzo. I turn back and run smack into a guy in mirrored sunglasses and a baseball cap. He grins.
"Excuse me, could I talk to you a minute about safety?"
I try to run, but he kicks my legs out from under me, and I hit the ground with an audible smack.
"We've got him,"
the guy says to no one I can see. Security starts coming from the character pin booths and gift shops. While startled tourists watch and snap pictures for the albums back home, USGW employee number 221 hauls me to the side of the Small World ride.
"Where's your accomplice? Where's Paul?"
he asks, and it takes me a minute to realize he means Gonzo. From the corner of my eye, I see Gonzo over by the bathroom in his dog disguise. He's sipping a soda and laughing, the phone still pressed to his ear.
"It's not his fault," I say. "I forced him to come with me, at gunpoint."
Employee number 221 seems to take this in, and I just roll for all I'm worth.
"Do you know how many times that crazy kid tried to escape? He even tried to pass a note to the waitress at the Constant Kettle."
Gonzo's turning around, walking toward us.
"Please, please do not come any closer, Gonzo," I silently plead.
As if he hears me, Gonzo looks up from his call and freezes. I crane my neck barely perceptibly toward the impressively mustachioed USGW agent in front of me. Gonzo plays quick charades with me. I, Kung Fu Kick, Agent Butt. I, Kung Fu Kick, Agent Butt? He repeats his charades slowly. I kick his butt? I shake my head very slowly.
"Live to fight another day,"
I shout, startling everyone around me.
"For you are the Dwarf of Destiny."
"What's that for?"
Employee number 741 is on the scene now. He presses the barrel of his gun into my side.
"He's crazy,"
employee number 221 says.
"Call security again."
"Roger that."
Employee number 741 speaks into his walkie-talkie. Gonzo has heard. He looks a little sad as he nods. There's not much I can do without alerting the guys to his presence. And so I put up my palm. It's not really a wave, not a goodbye or a hello, just a hand. A, "Hey, I see you." He gives me a palm right back. "I see you too." And then he does what he should. He folds into the swarm of people trying to have a good time and make a few memories, just another face in the crowd.
"We're taking him in for processing,"
employee number 741 says, and I know what that means. My throat is tight and my eyes sting. I'm close to crying. I've gotten all the way here just to fail at the last minute.
"Can I ask you something?" What do you guys think you're going to accomplish with all this? I mean, honestly, how can you prepare for the unpredictable?
Just shut up!
They sit me down, and suddenly, I'm pissed. Fuck this. I will not shut up. It's a small world after all, I sing. It's a small world after all.
What are you doing? Stop singing!
The agent commands, and it just makes me angrier.
A small, small world,
I sing even louder.
Oh, I love it when they give you entertainment in line,
a lady in a big sun hat says. The guy hits me hard with the gun. I double over.
Hey!
A guy in line says.
What are you doing? He's a kid!
Sir, we're with United Snow Globe Wholesalers, working to protect you.
Stay out of it, pal. Let the pros handle it.
Another guy in line advises the first.
Exactly,
employee number 457 says.
This is a matter of security.
No, it's a matter of abuse,
the dad says. I keep singing.
World of laughter, world of tears.
The kids don't know what's going on, but they know the song, and they start to sing along.
That's it, kids,
I shout.
We're putting this on TV, so everybody needs to grab a partner and sing really, really loud.
At the mention of TV, the line goes nuts. The USGW vigilantes aren't expecting this, and that's all I need. Okay, coyote mofo man, get your anvil ready. Come and get my Roadrunner ass. I bolt for Tomorrowland and hope my legs hold out.
Hey, stop!
The agents yell behind me.
Don't make us shoot!
He can't shoot me. I'm a kid, and this is Disney World. There's no shooting at Disney World. Beside me, there's a blinding flash, and a family of four buying cotton candy becomes an instant plastic tableau behind glass. Fast as I can, I duck around the Mad Tea Party ride, darting in and out of the crowds. I make it past the speedway, and finally I can see colorful planets of Tomorrowland. Shit! I'm gasping for breath. Vision's blurry. Behind me, I can hear screaming and shouts. The snow globe men are close. The lines for everything are 20 minutes deep at least, except for the Tomorrowland Transit Authority.
Excuse me,
I shout, staggering up the ramp, pushing past the few people in line. Before anyone can object, I hop onto the moving conveyor belt, past the attendant who can only get out a lame,
Hey, watch it!
As I fall into the seat of the tram. I stay low, out of sight, as the little tram glides into a tunnel toward the Carousel of Progress. My heart's beating as fast as the drum break in Cypress Grove Blues. I'm alert, eyes peeled, ears open, totally awake and alive. I'm waiting for a signal, a sign that I'm in the right place. A narrator's voice drones into the darkness. He sounds like he should be selling cars in an old newsreel. The train slows in front of a window showing a diorama of Tomorrowland. The narrator tells us this is a vision of the future, a place where people can live, work, and play in harmony. Some posters show machines that do things for you, robots, the standard-issue sci-fi stuff. I guess at one point this was cutting edge. It was a dream. The tram jolts around a corner, and suddenly the tunnel goes totally dark. I can't see my hand in front of my face. It makes my pulse jump in my throat. Is this it? Are they coming for me?
Dulcie?
I say into the darkness. It's silent, and then the meteor shower starts, like the dark is crying tears of colored light. The tram slows to a crawl, and I'm pretty sure they're stopping it to look for me. They can't be too far behind now. Trails of light blink over our faces, and for a second, I swear I see the neon outline of a door off to my right. Another streak breaks the dark, and I see it again. It's most definitely a door, and right in the center is a feather. The ride starts jerking forward again. It's now or never.
Hey, I don't think you're supposed to be doing that,
the man behind me says as I clamber over the side and step out onto a small platform. I turn around as carefully as I can on the narrow ledge, trying not to lose my footing. The narrator's voice thunders in the dark like some forgotten god. I push through the door, and the sudden whiteness nearly blinds me. Chapter 50, Wherein I Visit Tomorrowland. It takes a minute for my eyes to adjust. Far above me, I can see the grinding motion of huge gears in operation, keeping the ride going. Behind me is the door. Ahead of me is a long tunnel. I start walking.
Dulcie?
I call out.
Dulcie!
The tunnel winds around and stops at a door with a big X on it. I push it open. Inside is a stark white laboratory with a ginormous movie screen. A messy desk and chair sit in the middle. I've seen a glimpse of this room before, on my computer. Followthefeather.com. There's a man in a lab coat sitting in a folding chair at the desk. He's reading a tabloid and eating a bowl of jelly beans. On the screen behind him is the exact same image.
Dr. X?
I whisper. He looks down at me from the screen and in person squints.
Yes? Can I help you?
He's smaller than he seemed in the videos and pictures, but otherwise he looks exactly the same, like he hasn't aged a day. A small tinny radio plays the Copenhagen interpretation.
I've been looking for you.
You have?
Yes. Yes,
I say, laughing with some weird mix of relief and happiness.
I've been reading the papers and checking the personals, looking for clues and signs, making sense of the random, all to get to you.
Dr. X's eyebrows knit together in confusion.
Why?
You're Dr. X,
I say.
You're going to cure me.
I don't even know your name.
It's Cameron. Cameron Smith.
And why should I save you, Cameron Smith? What makes you so special?
Dr. X asks in a tired voice.
I don't know. It's just that Dulcie said you would, and it'd be kind of terrible if...
Dr. X interrupts me.
Terrible things happen all the time. Don't you know that? And there's no reason, no reason at all. No God holding us in his hands like a benevolent parent. This suffering is meaningless. Well, someone should do something about it. There should be some way to stop the pain, the loneliness, the uncertainty. And I've found the answer, a way to stop death. Go on. Pull that curtain over there.
My footsteps echo in the mostly empty room. I pull aside the curtain. Floor-to-ceiling shelves hold the most impressive snow globe collection I've ever seen. Each one is marked United Snow Globe Wholesalers. His hand encloses a globe.
This is the answer. To stop yearning. Our atoms sleeping. Content.
You brought something back from your travels in the Infinity Collider,
I say.
You unleashed dark energy on our world.
Did I? Oh, sorry.
Sorry?
I laugh.
Sorry? Jeez. I closed the wormhole, by the way. You can thank me later.
You can thank me later,
Dr. X muses.
That's from Starfighter, isn't it?
Yeah,
I say, a little impressed. Then I remember that he's being a complete asshole.
You used to be a scientist. You were doing amazing things. I mean, parallel worlds, time travel. That's huge. I don't think it gets any huger than that.
What does all that matter if we cannot stop the one injustice of life? Everything within us is born to live
and yet we die. And what we love can be taken from us in the blink of an eye. He blinks, and on the movie screen, his eyes seem huge, a confused owl. That is why I created United Snow Globe Wholesalers, to take away the uncertainty, the pain. No, I must continue my work. You can show yourself out. Not without Dulcie, I say. Who is this Dulcie person? A friend. I think she's part of your collection now. I just want her back, that's all. Very well. Dr. X clasps his hands together. If you can tell me one true thing you've learned, one thing worth living for, you may have your friend back. I don't know what to say. I could say anything. Fish, popcorn, unicycles. What has meaning to me might not mean a damn thing to Dr. X. I'm so tired my muscles are shaking and I feel like crying. And so I say the only thing that comes to mind, the truest thing I can think of. To live is to love. To love is to live. On the screen, Dr. X blinks, thinking. And then, suddenly, the Dulcie snow globe is on the desk in the room. Her plastic fists are pressed against the glass, and her red, painted mouth is open in a scream. Set her free, I say.
Ah, Dr. X says softly. That I cannot do.
You have to turn her back, I say.
I could freeze you too. Then you'd feel nothing.
I don't want to feel nothing.
That's wonderful, he murmurs, and the screen goes to static.
In the room, I hear someone clapping. The Wizard of Reckonings moving toward me, applauding. He's a good 6 feet tall, just my height. Hooked to his belt is a scabbard with a gleaming sword poking out. Those gloved hands reach up and remove his helmet.
Hey, Cameron. Remember me?
The Wizard of Reckoning grins, and I'd know that grin anywhere. I've been staring at it in the mirror for the past 16 years.
Big surprise, huh? Bet you didn't know you had that zit on your chin.
This can't be happening.
And yet it is. Nice cape, by the way, though it is a little copycat.
Off to the right is a long hallway dotted with doors. I stumble run toward the safety of it.
Won't work,
the wizard calls after me as I run smack into the wall.
It's painted. Sorry, my little roadrunner. No escaping this.
He unzips his space armor jacket. Underneath, he's wearing an orange tee. My parents went to Shithenge, and all I got was this crappy t-shirt.
But we got rid of you. You can't be here, I say, looking for an exit.
The wizard's smile hardens.
I'm always here, Cameron. You people, I tell ya. Always looking for signs, for meaning. This is what you keep at bay. Chaos, disorder, the irrational and unexplainable. Death looming on the horizon. A big, dark hole sucking up everything in its path. No escape.
He takes a seat on the edge of the desk.
You always seemed to have that figured out. Why try? We're just gonna die in the end. Sensible attitude. I liked that about you, Cameron. That's why I'm a little surprised by this third act filled with heroics. So much effort. Really, you're making it much harder than it needs to be.
Making what harder than it needs to be? Where is the door I came in through?
Dying, of course.
I'm not gonna die. Dr. X is going to cure me, I shout.
There is no Dr. X, Spongebrain, the wizard says. See, this whole thing, it's in your head. A fantasy jerry-rigged from your life's scrap metal heap, dude.
Then who's that? I point to Dr. X's image on the screen.
Why must we die when everything within us was born to live? Dr. X says, like a loop of tape that's gone back to the beginning. It's a tragedy cloaked in a comedy.
Some guy you saw on the internet once.
That's not true. Those United Snow Globe employees.
The Wizard of Reckoning's hand comes down hard, rattling the snow globes.
Do not exist. Just a figment of your spongiform mind. They're stand-ins. The coyote on your ass.
No!
I look around the room frantically.
Oh, Cameron. Don't tell me you still don't get it.
He knocks on my head.
Hello? Is any of this getting through?
Ow! Quit it!
Sorry. My bad.
He sighs and picks some lint off his shiny pants, and I make a vow that if I live through this, I will never wear pants like that.
Cameron, what do you think this whole trip has been about, man? Searching for a cure? Saving the universe? Dude, please. It's about this.
He throws a crumpled piece of paper at my feet. I pick it up and smooth it out. It's Junior's message that I stuck on the wishing tree back in Hope with Dulcie.
Read it out loud, man.
I wish to live.
There you go.
He smiles.
But Dr. X was supposed to give me the cure.
There is no cure for this life.
The wizard takes a seat on the folding chair for a minute. He stretches his long legs out in front of him, removes the sword from its scabbard, and polishes it with the edge of his shirt.
You live it to the best of your ability.
This is bullshit! I was supposed to get my wish!
I can't help it. I'm crying. The Wizard of Reckoning keeps polishing.
Sort of.
Huh?
He makes a sound in his throat, a cross between a grunt and a sigh. He's tiring of me.
So, right. To review,
he says, putting the weapon down and lacing his fingers together, resting them on the back of his head. My head. His head. Shit, I don't know anymore.
Did you live these past 2 weeks?
I live every week, I argue.
No, you exist. The question is, did you live?
For a second, I stop fighting and think about what he's asking me. Did I live? I made a best friend, lost another, cried, laughed, lost my virginity, gained a piece of magic, gave it away, possibly changed a man's destiny, drank beer, slept in cheap motels, got pissed off, laughed some more, escaped from the police and bounty hunters, watched the sunset over the ocean, had a soda with my sister, saw my mom and dad as they are, understood music, had sex again, and it was pretty mind-blowing. Not that I'm keeping score. Okay, I'm keeping score. Played the bass, went to a concert, wandered around New Orleans, freed the snow globes, saved the universe.
Well?
The wizard asks. Dulcie, my mind answers.
So you're saying none of this is real?
I ask. He checks his reflection in the cool steel of his blade.
I'm not saying that at all. Reality is what you make of it.
Dulcie.
Then I make it that,
I say, pointing to Dulcie.
That?
The wizard flicks his finger at Dulcie's glass prison, and I want to punch him.
That's a snow globe, Cameron.
No,
I say, swiping at the tears.
I don't believe that. I won't. She's real.
He holds out his hand.
Join me, Cameron.
I start to laugh. The Wizard of Reckoning tries to smirk, but I can tell he's confused.
Hold up,
I say.
I know this bit. You're starfightering me. You're going to tell me to become one with you and the universe, and then fold in on yourself.
He nods appreciatively.
Not going for it, huh?
I cross my arms.
No.
He shrugs.
Okay. Plan B.
His sword comes down swift and hard as justice. It leaves a bloody cut on my arm, and I gasp in pain.
Holy crap!
I fall down and scramble away from him. The blood leaves spots on the pristine white floor, like stars in a forming universe.
Ooh, dude. That looks nasty. You might want Glory to take a look at that.
I'm on my knees on the white floor, holding my hand over my bleeding arm.
Glory's back at the hospital.
Yeah. Where the hell do you think you are?
What the hell are you talking about, freak face? I'm at Disney World.
God, my arm hurts. The wizard advances in little dance steps, swinging his sword and catching it like a partner.
No, man. You never left St. Jude's.
The edges of the scene buckle. The room wavers and blurs till we're back in the hospital. Nurses and doctors bustle about. Glory walks past, a cup of coffee in her hand.
Glory?
I blink twice, but there she is in her pink scrubs, her angel pins clinking. I glare at the wizard, who's got a smug little smile.
This isn't happening. You're making it up.
The hospital fades as the Wizard of Reckoning shrugs.
Suit yourself.
He swings the sword and slices at my other arm.
Ah!
I wince. I raise my ultimate peace weapon and whack at him. It collapses in on itself.
Dude, that's a toy. I'm carrying the real deal.
His blade comes down again, narrowly missing me. I've got to get away from this guy. He's too much for me.
Those prions should be ripping you apart right about now, buddy, destroying what's left of your tenuous grasp on reality.
My e-ticket meter has gone to empty. In its place is my hospital ID bracelet. Smith, Cameron John.
What you dreaming about now, Cam, my man?
Dreaming. Dreams. Do atoms dream of more? That's what Dr. X wanted to know. I wish he were here so I could tell him yes. Yes, they do. Mine have been dreaming for weeks now. Every one of those freaking atoms catching a wave through the universe and laughing.
What?
The Wizard of Reckoning's looking at me funny, his sword dangling at his side. There is no meaning but what we assign. We create our own reality. I can live with that.
I said, catch me if you can.
With that, I leap up and run for the corridor, fast as a roadrunner, and open the first door I see. Chapter 51, in which Coyote and Roadrunner meet one last time. It's quiet on the other side of that door. Daylight's streaming in,
landing in bright patches on familiar green-flowered wallpaper. I'm standing in our old kitchen, watching the 8-year-old me at the table eating sugary cereal and reading a comic book. Mom walks by with her coffee. She looks young and happy. She rubs a hand across my head, tussling my hair. I rub it back into messy place.
"Love you, Crank Muffin,"
she says.
"I'm not a Crank Muffin. Don't mess with my hair,"
I grumble. It seems like a bratty thing to say, but Mom laughs.
"You are a Crank Muffin, but you're my Crank Muffin."
She sits beside me with her paper, and there we are, reading and sipping and slurping. I want to tell her she's a good mom, that I am her Crank Muffin, and I like it. The Wizard of Reckoning steps out of the bathroom that's off the kitchen. I don't know how he got there.
"Hey, dude,"
he says, smirking.
"Nice moment, huh? What was your thing about your hair, though? Kinda teen girl of you, if you don't mind me saying."
He twirls the blade like a threat, and I dash back out the door and into that long white hallway where all the doors are like vibrating strings. I try the next door. I'm in Dad's office. Dad's at his desk, hunched over some papers. Raina's pacing around the office. They're not looking at each other. Raina's telling Dad about some guy she met at a concert. She says he asked her out on a date, and Dad's telling her she should go. She looks a little hurt. She says,
"Maybe I will."
Dad says,
"I think you should."
Then it's quiet for a minute, and Dad says,
"Well, I've got a lot of paperwork to catch up on."
Raina says,
"Sure."
And that's it. She's gone. I don't know if this is something that's going to happen, something that's happening now, or something that will never happen. It's hard to tell.
"Cameron, where are you, you slippery little roadrunner?"
The wizard's hot on my tail. I leap back into the corridor and through another door. I'm in the studio audience of some TV show. Stacy Johnson's front and center on the soundstage, wearing a really hot dress, and I think, whoa, I had her. Or maybe she had me. She reads from a teleprompter.
"Tonight, on The Hostess, will Freedom best Jackie in the Not Enough Menus challenge? Or will they both have to turn in their name tags when the reservation book goes missing?"
"Dude, she is pretty hot."
The wizard's sitting a row over.
"Stop chasing me,"
I shout. He shrugs. I take off again, ducking in and out of doors. I run past the Small World ride.
"Oh my God,"
a lady cries.
"A little boy drowned. He just jumped overboard."
Open the next door, and I'm in somebody's backyard. Swing set. Toys. A little girl toddles over to a yard gnome, pounds its head with her pudgy hands.
"Cameron, over here,"
her mom calls, her arms open wide. It's Jenna. Jenna's a mom.
"Meep, meep,"
the Wizard of Reckoning taunts, and I scramble back into that endless corridor. He pops out from behind a door in front of me.
"Hotcha,"
he says, waving his spirit fingers.
"Stop doing that, it's annoying,"
I yell as I dive through a different door and find myself in a desert, a gun in my hands. I'm wearing camouflage.
"Move it, soldier, there's a war on."
A guy barks and slaps my back, and then we're marching forward.
"Keith, tell that story again, the one about the party house,"
one of the soldiers calls out.
"Oh, man, you would not believe how fine Marisol is, I'm telling you."
The other soldier turns and says. His uniform reads, "Private Keith Washington."
"It was the rockingest day."
"Hey,"
I shout.
Wait!
His foot comes down.
Of my life!
The sand explodes in a mile-high fireball. There's shouting, orders, chaos, explosions, gunfire. I toss the gun and run, pushing out into the safety of the hall. Except that it's not safe. Another door, more sand. But this is a beach, not a war zone.
Can I help you?
Behind me is a shack. The Magic Screw Guy Boat Repair. The man at the counter holds out his hands as if to say, I don't have all day, pal. His hat reads, Keith.
I said, can I help you?
You already did, I say, and dart for the next door. I keep running, trying doors. In one, Yubi's on stage in New Orleans, drumming for Junior Webster. In another, he's playing Junior's albums and guiding college kids toward good music in his shop. The Copenhagen Interpretation plays a futuristic, Tomorrowland-worthy palace in a sky where three moons shine and, you know, the acoustics are really good. I see the busy streets of New Orleans and the quiet peace of the graveyards. I see people coming and going from the wishing tree, pinning their hopes to it so it's always in bloom. In another, Gonzo and Justin ride a coaster together. When it plunges, they raise their arms and scream in happiness. I walk through all kinds of landscapes, past, present, future, alternatives. At first, I try hard to figure out what's real and what's not. But after a while, it doesn't matter anymore. Door after door after door. I open one and am surrounded by the sight of gases twirling, stars swirling. Something fires and the whole thing is set in motion. A universe is being born. It's so cool. It's a thing that should be shared. I wish Dulcie were here to see it.
Cool, huh?
It's the wizard. I know that without even looking. Yeah, I say. The room falls away, and we're in that corridor again. But it looks different. It's still really white, but the ceiling is lower. It has spongy acoustic tiles. I hear the beep of the heart monitor and the whir of a respirator.
You're out of doors, Cameron.
Just like that, we're back in the room by the desk. There's nothing on it now but the Wizard of Reckoning holding the Angel Snow Globe.
Any last words?
I shrug. Only what I've already said.
Oh, right. To live is to love. To love is to live. That's your great insight?
Yeah. He starts laughing. It's really weird to watch yourself laugh. Like I never knew my mouth went up higher on one side.
Oh, Cameron, dude, that is so lame.
Yeah. I'm laughing too, because really, the whole thing strikes me as hilarious all of a sudden.
Come on, buddy. You're not exiting stage left on that, are you? Give me something else. And don't forget my soda, punk. Something.
Sorry, I giggle. That's all I got. The me, who's the Wizard of Reckoning, sets his mouth in a grim line.
That's too bad, 'cause you're gonna die.
I stop laughing. Yeah, I know.
There's nothing else.
Nothing else.
Meep, meep. That's all for now, kids,
the wizard taunts. Nothing else. Nothing.
Time to say goodbye.
Nothing else. Isn't that what Junior said back in New Orleans? Man, that seems so long ago.
You take this on, and someday, when you gotta, when there's nothing else, you play it.
I try to run for my backpack and fall flat on my stomach. My legs have stopped working, so I crawl. Every inch is an exercise in will and pain.
Oh, Cameron, crawling? Dude, that's an icky way to go out.
Backpack. Just need to reach my backpack.
Here comes the big bad coyote.
Fingers are so stiff. Shit, not now. Please, not now. Fumble with the zipper.
Owie!
The wizard howls. Zipper's open. Reach in. Feel the cold metal. It's in my hands.
Hey, what do you got there, buddy?
Just this. I raise Junior Webster's horn and blow for all I'm worth. Nothing. I hear nothing. The Wizard of Reckoning chuckles, then stops.
Hey, I heard that. B flat. Hey.
He's starting to fold in on himself, everything disappearing, pulling in. Just before his face crumbles, he looks right at me.
Well, shit.
All at once, the snow globes shatter. The water rises, and I'm caught in it. It pushes me along, down that hallway, toward one last door. My face is reflected in the knob, all distorted. I open it wide and step in. The ocean. A house. And there's the old lady in her garden. She looks up briefly, nods, and goes right back to planting her garden. So I go on in the house, walk upstairs. It smells sweet. There's Lily of the Valley in a jar on the dresser. And the window looks out on the ocean, where the sun and its shadow hang low in the sky. The bed's been turned down, and I realize I'm really tired. But a good tired, like I've spent all day at the beach. The sheets are cool and welcoming as I slip in. It's like everything is slowing down inside me. Beep, beep, whirr, whirr. The ceiling, white like the moon, like snow with all its words. The angel picture on the wall. Beep, whirr. Mom, Dad, and Jenna are gathered around me. Glory steps over to the respirator and flicks a switch. She turns off the EKG and the heart monitor, too, flipping switches till the room is perfectly quiet. I'm sort of floating here. It's not bad. It's not anything, really. Mom and Dad each take one of my hands. Jenna sits beside me. Everything slows. The room gets darker, and I feel like I'm being pulled towards something I can't see. Things streak past me. Stars, gases, satellites. Whole planets wobble and careen away. Universes, too. It makes me feel vast and impossibly small at the same time. Connected. Just before the room falls completely away, Glory puts a hand over my eyes, and just like that, the world disappears. Chapter 1. Wherein... I know two things for sure. One, I'm floating. And two, it's really fucking dark. No, really, man, you have no idea. I'm trying to be okay with it. Really, I am. But frankly, it's freaking me out. Plus, it's boring. I hope this isn't the whole package, because, geez, I'll have to learn a craft or something to keep from going mental. There's a soft sound coming from up ahead, and just the faintest light, like an old TV being turned on and warming up. The light reaches me enough so that I can see I'm in a boat on a river. I hear singing. I know that song. The boat floats out of the darkness, and I start laughing. The Bollywood puppets are singing to me. It's a world of laughter, a world of tears. Up ahead, I can see her for real, whatever that means. In her torn fishnets and black combat boots, she's hanging with the fishing Inuit boy. "Hey, cowboy," she calls.
waving from the snowy white shore. Her wings have been spray-painted with Buddha cows. They look awesome.
Thanks for showing up. What took you so long?
Took a detour, Princess. It's getting brighter. She dances a little jig.
This would make a hell of a TV show, huh?
Yeah, but no one would believe it. I should let it go. But it's like the hole, like the door, and I have to know. Or at least, I have to ask. Hey, Dulcie, was any of that real? She finishes her dance and the wings come to rest.
Who's to say what's real or not?
Yeah, but my barometer on reality, not so good since I started going crazy.
Yeah, well, who but the mad would choose to keep on living? In the end, aren't we all just a little crazy?
So, this place, I say, whistling.
Yeah, it's a great ride, isn't it?
She says wistfully while the Inuit boy pulls the same fish from the hole, puts it back, pulls it up again, smiling the whole while. You know what? It really is. Definitely e-ticket. She brushes my hair off my forehead with those soft fingers.
Wanna go again?
Maybe. I'm not really thinking about that, about what happens next, or if anything does. All I know is what I'm feeling right now. I want to kiss Dulcie. After that, I don't know.
What are you thinking about?
She says, laughing. I smile. Nothing.
Good. I like 'em big and stupid.
The boat drifts to the glittering plastic shore of its own accord. I take her hand and step onto the snowbank. It's cold against my feet, and when I reach down, the snow comes up in my fingers, icy and wet. Awesome, I murmur, scooping it up. It's so bright it hurts my eyes. There's a splashing sound. The fish on the end of the hook is struggling against its fate. The Inuit boy laughs and throws him back in the hole. Dulcie bumps me with her shoulder.
Hey.
Hey yourself, I say, bumping her back. She opens her wings and takes me in. The song plays on, and the lights are so bright they seem to be alive. Dulcie parts her lips to kiss me, and there's music. It's a note in an octave I've never heard before, but that I somehow know has always been there. A note of endings, of beginnings. A note you have to be ready to hear.
You ready?
She asks.
Sure. Are you really?
No, I say. Not at all. She grins wide then. It's like the sky can't take any more, and it explodes. All particles and partner particles and perhapsitrons, something new being born. A whole universe of yes and no and why the hell not. Sparks fly out past us, a zooming show of charged light that catches Dulcie's face in mid-laugh. And there's nothing to say but wow. Wow. The same word backward and forward. Dulcie sighs in happiness.
That's always my favorite part.
And I can see why. This is Eric Davies. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Going Bovine by Libba Bray. This program was produced by Dan Musselman and directed by Jessica Kay. Text copyright 2009 by Martha E. Bray. Production copyright 2009, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.